This podcast is produced by Linear B Group, the brand, content, and account-based marketing agency for the private capital industry. You're listening to Fun Shack. I'm Ross Butler, and today I'm speaking with Etienne Desormes, CEO of Elm Capital, a fundraising and liquidity provider to private market investors, both GP and LP. Etienne founded Elm in 2004 after a career in investment banking at JP Morgan. Our discussion focuses on private equity secondaries, how they've grown, how they're used, and how the market for existing private equity commitments is about to evolve. Etienne, welcome to Fund Shack. The private equity sector, the way people think about it and talk about it, is very kind of primary focused. It's about origination. Maybe that's something to do with wanting to be close to the source of entrepreneurial activity. But most markets aren't primary markets. They're secondary markets. And we're guilty of this on Fund Shack as well, because we've never really covered private equity secondaries specifically. And that's what I want to do today with you now. You're a placement agent, a broker in the world of private equity, looking specifically at secondaries as well as the primary world. Can you start us off by kind of contextualizing the private equity secondaries market? Roughly kind of how big is it, would you say, as a proportion to the rest of the market, and how important is it?
So, well, thank you for having me. So the secondary market is a way to provide liquidity to a market which is by definition illiquid. You know, as you know, private equity funds usually have a 10-year maturity. On average, they have actually a 16-year maturity. And once you have signed up, you don't have a way to exit unless you're able to find somebody who's going to buy the stake from you. And so that's how the secondary market has developed at the beginning of the year 2000. There's a few pioneers who started looking at how they could provide liquidity to LPs in private equity funds. And at the beginning, the market was, you know, very discreet. LPs didn't want to participate in the secondary market because they felt that if they were seen to be selling stakes, it meant they were distressed, that they had an issue. And so the market was relatively confidential, for the, maybe the first part of the century, for the first decade.
The real private part of private equity.
Yes, exactly. And so I think what contributed to change the market was the global financial crisis in, 2008, 2010, when suddenly, liquidity dried up. There were no more distributions. LPs didn't have money to face capital calls. And, they were stuck. GPs were continuing to call capital. LPs didn't have distributions. They didn't have the money to pay for these capital calls. And so a very large number of players started to look at the secondary market. And, this is the only time in our career where we sold funds at a 100% discount. So people were getting out of private equity funds. They were willing to abandon all the value that was in the assets just to, be released for the unfunded capital that they were still on call for. And so during that period, people realized that the only way to get liquidity in the private equity market was to go through the secondary market. And people got used to it. LPs saw that, it wasn't that complicated to do a secondary transaction. But they also realized that it was a good way to invest their money. And so we had, at the same time, the LP side of the market was getting more comfortable with selling. But then, many people realized, well, it's a good business. We should raise money. And so many fund of funds started to develop a pocket for secondaries. New entrants came to the market. And, today it's a very buoyant market. And, in terms of, quantification, it probably represents about, 15% of the overall market. But, if you look at the dry powder that we're seeing today across all the secondary funds, it's probably $200 billion to be invested over the next couple of years. And obviously, prices haven't stayed at, the kind of discount that I've mentioned. Prices have increased. And, after the GFC, People, you know, started to realize that, you know, the secondary market was a tool to manage their portfolios, not just to get liquidity in a distressed situation. And today, you know, we are again in a phase where there is a bit of a lack of liquidity. And so, you know, we're seeing again quite a few people looking at the secondary market to help them because there's no liquidity in the market.
So the secondaries market really grew up amid adversity and it allowed a kind of a maturing of the industry.
Yes.
We've had a kind of a difficult period over the last couple of years. 2023 was a very slow year. That's an adversity of sorts. How's the secondaries market responded to that?
You know, what we have seen in the last couple of years, you know, with the war, with the rise of inflation, rise of interest rates, there's been basically two issues that have hit LPs. The first one is the so-called denominator effect, which means that when you're invested in public markets and private markets and suddenly the public markets go down dramatically as they have done in 2021 and 2022, suddenly your allocation to private equity becomes much bigger than your target. And so you become overexposed and therefore you have an issue because you can't invest in private equity anymore and you want to reduce that exposure. The second issue is that with rising interest rates, it's been more difficult for companies to be sold to other private equity funds because the leverage is more expensive. And, you know, in the years 2017 to 2020, leverage was very cheap. Companies were acquired at very high multiples because you could borrow a lot of money. But today, when you want to exit those companies, the counterparties to which you would like to sell them don't have access to the same leverage and they can't pay the prices that you pay. So a lot of funds are stuck with, you know, large portfolios, which they are unable to sell, which means that their LPs are not getting the liquidity that they were expecting. And because they're not getting liquidity and because they're over-allocated to private equity, they suddenly have an issue because you still have the capital calls that you need to pay. But again, you don't have the distributions to pay for these capital calls. And so people have started looking at the secondary market as a way to solve their problem. But until last year, I would say the prices went down on the secondary market, you know, quite sharply. And, you know, let me explain why. When you trade on the secondary market, you always trade on the basis of the last published net asset value. But net asset values are published usually 3 or 4 months after the actual date of today. So today we're trading funds on the basis of, you know, probably December NAVs, but some funds haven't even published those valuations yet. So we trade on the basis of September NAVs. If in the meantime, the market has gone down, you know that the September NAV is completely overvalued because if you look at where the market is today, it's much lower. And so in a situation where stock markets are going down, by definition, discounts increase on the secondary market. And so instead of being able to sell at the average discount that we have observed on the market, which is around, you know, 10%. Last year and in 2022 in particular, discounts for buyout funds came down to almost 30% on average. You know, a fund that used to trade at par to a net asset value before the rise in interest rates was trading in 2022 at 15% discount. And that was for a good fund, you know, then less good GPs or older vintages with companies that are difficult to sell were trading at big discounts. And so in 2022, despite the fact that people needed liquidity, there wasn't so much activity on the secondary market because there was a big gap between, you know, prices between the bid and ask spread, essentially. Now, in 2023, the market has kind of recovered. You know, public markets have gone up. This denominator effect that I was explaining has sort of reduced because, you know, public markets have now gone up. And so the weight of private equity has gone down in the overall portfolios. In today's market, we're still trading at prices that are below the historical average. But you know, there is a good deal flow, especially during since the beginning of the year. We see many investors that are willing to sell either portfolios, so they would sell, you know, maybe 25 funds and find somebody who would buy the whole portfolio, or they sell single fund interests. And when they sell single fund interest, it's usually funds where, you know, they will not re-up in the future. So they think, why should I keep this in my portfolio? I'm not going to keep that relationship going. And so they decide to sell, or maybe there has been a change of strategy, a change of GP. You know, there's many factors that can justify the sale. And so we've seen this on the LP side. But then, as I was explaining, the GPs have got a similar issue, because they've got these portfolios with companies that they find difficult to sell, because they can't find buyers in the current interest rate environment. And so GPs have also started looking at using the secondary market to sell companies. So, you know, until recently, the secondary market was mostly for fund interest, so LP interest in funds. But now we're also looking at the secondary market to sell portfolio companies. And so
individual portfolio companies.
Individual portfolio companies.
So these continuation funds, is that the same thing?
Exactly. It's they're selling into those so-called continuation funds, which allow the GP to continue to manage the company. They just replace the LP base. So until recently, you had essentially three options when you wanted to sell a company. You do an IPO, you sell to a strategic buyer, you sell to another private equity fund. Now, the IPO market, you know, is not that booming at the moment. Strategic buyers are, you know, being quite reluctant to buy. Private equity funds have issues with high interest rates. And so there's this new avenue that has opened, which is selling to a continuation fund, which is funded by secondary buyers. Sometimes you can ask your existing investors to roll over and so also invest in the continuation fund. And so basically you provide liquidity to the investor in your fund by moving the company in a different vehicle, which is funded by a different mix of investors.
So I've often found with the private equity market, it's not the way it goes isn't merely based on what seems to be rational, makes sense, but also the perception of something. What is the perception of those types of deals? What's the sentiment around them in the market and the various trade-offs around continuation funds?
You know, we did our first continuation fund in 2007. So, you know, it's when I say it's new, it has been there for a long time. But, you know, people were reluctant to use it because it was not seen as a true exit. But in a market where there is a lack of liquidity, then, you know, suddenly people change their mind and they say, well, that's not a bad idea. You know, I haven't seen any liquidity coming out of this portfolio. Why don't you do something? And so whereas, you know, a few years ago, LPs might have been reluctant, or, you know, they thought there might be a conflict of interest because you're actually selling from one fund to another fund that you manage yourself. Today, you know, they're a lot more comfortable with it. The conflicts of interest are managed because, you know, the funds have limited partnerships advisory committees, which, you know, make the decision and they decide whether the GP is allowed to do this or not. And, you know, it's a way for LPs to get liquidity. So today, there's two type of GP-led transactions that people are considering. One is to sell, you know, so-called trophy assets. It's one of your best company. You think there is still, you know, quite a bit of runway to create value. In many cases, these companies have grown by acquisitions, but your fund has invested all its dry powder. There's no more money to continue with the acquisition. So you move it into a continuation vehicle and you also raise extra money so you can continue the buildup through the continuation vehicle.
Who are normally the investors in that type of fund?
They are a combination of secondary funds. So typically, the lead buyer would be a secondary fund that would drive the price. And then the GP would go back to all their LPs and say, this is the deal. Would you like to roll over? at the same conditions as these buyers, or would you like to get liquidity? And so in the end, in the continuation vehicle, you have a mix of existing LPs and new LPs that are mostly secondary right. funds. And there are today, there are secondary funds that are raising money just to do those kind of GP-led because they are concentrated deals. When the secondary market started, what secondary funds or secondary GPs were selling to their LPs is, you invest in my fund, we buy funded assets, so you don't have, you know, this long period during which we're yep. charging fees, but we're not investing the money. So we give you funded portfolios that are mature, so they will distribute cash more rapidly than a typical primary investment. And so you will get maybe not the same kind of multiple on your investment that you would do with a primary investment, but you will get a good IRR because your distributions are going to come quite quickly. And you will have a very diversified portfolios because we will buy portfolios from all kind of LPs. Now, suddenly, if you start buying single companies, the diversification aspect is no longer there because you know it becomes a very concentrated portfolio. And so that's why you know, dedicated pools of money have been raised so that investors know that, you know, they will probably have, you know, good multiples on these transactions because you're buying these trophy assets, but you don't have the same diversification that you would have if you were to invest yeah. in a, you know, portfolio of LP interests.
Presumably the secondary investor in that context is quite a powerful LP.
Well, sometimes they represent the majority of the fund. Mm. So obviously they have quite some power. Mm. But you know, I must say that you know, I was an investment banker before doing this. I was working in M&A and capital markets. And I must say that the secondary market compared to traditional investment banking is a very friendly market. You know, all people we deal with in the secondary market are nice people. You know, you don't have this aggressiveness or the arrogance that you have in investment banking sometimes. And so
yeah, it's still relationship based, isn't it? It's not purely trading.
It's very much relationship based, and many of these transactions are too large for just one secondary fund to underwrite it. So they're used to work with each other. You know, many of the deals we do are syndicated. And so, yeah, there's a nice atmosphere in this market. Okay. And I think, you know, for GPs, you have some GPs who don't like to have a secondary fund as an LP because they're not going to invest in your next fund. Secondary fund, by nature, they only buy funds that are already existing. And so some GPs are restrictive, when they accept to, you know, transfer the fund from one LP to another, and they say we don't want secondary funds. But even there, you know, the secondary market has become so developed today that most of the GPs that used to be restrictive are now more open and and they tolerate, let's say, secondary funds amongst their LP base.
So before I took you on a sidetrack, I think you said that there were two types of GP-led.
Yeah, so the first one is the trophy asset. The other one is what do you do when you have a fund that's you know, more than 10 years old? You still have two or three companies there. It's been challenging to sell them for whatever reason. And so that's another way to provide liquidity to your LPs. You want to liquidate the fund. It's gone beyond its expiry period. And so you can also do a continuation fund for that.
And that's really the other end of the spectrum.
Exactly. And it's in today's market, there is so much deal flow that, you know, there is a sort of flight towards quality. And so those deals are more difficult to pull together. There will always be buyer for these assets, but the discounts are not the same. You know, they're much wider discounts. And then when you go back to your LPs and you say, okay, we can sell these three assets, the discount is 30%, then the LPs are saying, well, you know, do I want to take a 30% haircut on this portfolio? Maybe you keep them another couple of years and try and get our money back at NAV. So a lot of these processes that are attempted to sell tail-end portfolios of companies, you know, they are shelved in the end because the gap between the expectations of buyers and sellers is too wide.
Yeah. Tell me how your company, Elm Capital, fits into to the secondaries market, because you're a placement agent, and traditionally that's rounding up money for a buyout fund or whatever it is, a venture capital fund, that they can invest in primary deals. But when it comes to the secondaries market, what's your role?
Yeah, so, you know, on the primary side, our role is to raise money for funds. And so we speak to a lot of LPs, because that's what we do when we raise money. And when you speak to these LPs, you realize that they don't only invest in funds, but they also sometimes they need to sell. And so when you establish a good relationship with LPs, you also think, how could I help them? You know, maybe they don't want to invest, but maybe there's something else we can do for them. And so we have developed, you know, very good relationship with the LP community, and we just offer them a sort of one-stop shop service. Mm. And when we talk to them, we ask them, would you want to invest in our fund, or do you want to sell this fund, or do you want to buy this fund? And, you know, we've been doing this now for, you know, more than 15 years. And so we are known in the market for doing these types of transactions. So people contact us and they said, can you help selling this portfolio? Yeah. Can you sell this fund? Can you identify? Some people come to us and say, you know, we've got very good pricing on these funds. Can you identify a seller? Mm. We would also go and try and find somebody who's willing to sell.
Yes, you present them the opportunities. But part of me thinks that the difference between like investing in a buyout fund, like a primary buyout fund, and then secondary opportunity, they seem like one step removed from each other, but I just wonder from a risk return perspective whether they're similar at all. I don't think they are, because one is a blind pool and you're taking a view on a bunch of people in an office in Mayfair or Paris. And another is an actual asset or assets, many assets maybe, with cash flows that you have to analyze. They feel to me like completely different asset classes almost.
Well,
certainly risk return profiles.
Yes. I mean, you know, buyouts would typically give you a very good multiple. You know, you try to get, I mean, the good funds will give you 2.5-3 times your money on your investment. Secondary fund is not going to give you that. You know, secondary investors underwrite at somewhere between 1.6 and 2 times, but they will give you much bigger diversification, because they will invest in a wide range of portfolios, and they will also give you much faster distributions, because they're buying assets that are already you know, invested. Mm. And so the shelf life of those assets is much shorter. And so if you're looking at a portfolio of private equity investments, you want to have a mix of investments that are going to give you a good multiple and investments that are probably lower risk and will give you a good IRR. And so all in all, you know, people tend to allocate maybe 15% of their total private equity investments to secondary funds.
Right.
And that's supported the rise of the secondary market, because, you know, I was talking to you about, you know, the supply and the lack of liquidity, and that's what's driving the supply. What's driving the demand is the huge quantities that have been raised by secondary funds to invest, and that's why there's a match between the supply and the demand, because all the money that has been raised needs to be invested. And it's also interesting to see how secondary funds can be more aggressive at different times during the life of their fund. When they're fundraising, they like to deploy money quickly, because then they can show to their investors that the portfolio is already partially deployed. And so, you know, they might be more aggressive in terms of pricing in order to get these assets on the ground. And then when they get to the end of their fund, they want to finish deploying the fund so they can start raising the next one. And so there again, they might be a bit more aggressive in terms of pricing.
It must be a strange bifurcation of the LP base, because, you know, look, from a bird's eye view, they're all just, you know, LPs and fund investors. But you've got these secondary investors who are seriously geared up, presumably, to understand these prospects. And then you've got these other investors who are almost along for the ride. What's your advice to the kind of the rump of LPs who want 10% or 15% of secondaries? What's the question that you ask?
Well, the question is, what sort of assets do you want to invest with? So, because in the secondary market, there's also different kind of players. You know, you've got the people who are going for the good funds, good quality funds. They're going to pay good prices, but they know that these GP are going to be delivering because they have a history of delivering. And then you have people who are saying, well, that's fine, but this is a crowded market. Everybody, if everybody wants to buy the same good GPs, what can we add? And so they buy the less good GPs or they buy the older portfolios. So there's a big market for, you know, these so-called tail-end portfolios, which are sold mostly by fund of funds who, you know, when they have reached the year 12, 13, 15 of their fund of fund, they still have a tail of funds that each fund has got maybe one company, two companies left. And at some point, they want to liquidate those fund of funds and give the money back to their LPs. And so they sell a portfolio with, you know, we just did a deal with 80 funds and they sell it. And those go a relatively big discounts. You're talking about, you know, 30% discount, 30, 35%. But at that point in time, most of the value of the fund of fund has already been distributed. Mm. And so it doesn't really move the needle if you look at the total multiple or total IRR. You know, on a $1 billion portfolio, you're selling the tail, it might be, you know, 80 million or 100 million. And so even if you take a big discount on that, it doesn't really affect, you know, your overall return. And so those secondary funds, what they're selling to their LPs, you know, we buy diversified portfolios with old assets that are going to distribute quickly, and we buy them at big discounts. So, you know, there is an opportunity for you to make more money. And then there are specialized secondary funds for credit, for infrastructure. There are funds that only buy fund of funds. So there's a bit of everything. And if you talk to an LP that is looking at the secondary market, my advice would be, you know, do a bit of the, you know, high quality assets, do a bit of the tail end, do a bit of the credit, so that you have a portfolio that is actually diversified and, and you know, addresses different segments of the market.
And what should they be asking the vendor to really understand the asset? I mean, obviously there's a million questions, but if there was one.
Well, you know, the vendor is usually an LP. And the LP is not that close to the asset. You know, it's a good question to ask in a GP-led because then you're talking to the GP. The GP knows the company quite well. But the vendor of an LP portfolio is not the best person to answer the question. What you do as a buyer, you actually want to speak to the GP of the underlying funds. Mm. And what do you ask them? It's always the same question is, you know, when do you expect to sell the company and at what multiple? Yeah? And so some GPs won't answer that question because they don't want to give an indication, but most of them would give you a rough indication. And so in every process that we run, so we run processes in two steps. So this is like an auction. First round auction, we share information on the funds in the data room. You know, people sign NDAs, they have access to a data room, they can see all the reports on the fund. On that basis, we ask them to give us a non-binding offer. And then we would then, because we tend to contact a large number of buyers, like maybe 40, 50, 60 buyers. And then we will narrow down the number of buyers to maybe three or four. And then those buyers, we will organize calls with the GPs to talk about the assets. And that's when they, and we are not involved in those conversations. They do it on one-on-one, but that's usually when they ask them about, you know, their forecast in terms of liquidity and valuation.
So we're at the, towards the end of Q1 2024. I don't normally ask my guests to make predictions, but what are your thoughts on how the year is going to unfold from a secondaries market or private equity?
Well, I mean, what we have seen since the beginning of the year is increased deal flow across, you know, all sort of LPs, all sort of funds quality, and that's because prices have gone up. So the lack of liquidity is still there. You know, you still have this issue that I was talking about distribution. There's a lack of distribution, so there's a lack of liquidity. So that is fueling the supply. Mm. But then all the money that's been raised in the last couple of years needs to be invested, and that's driving the demand. And so if both supply and demand are going up, at some point they meet, and the bid-ask spread is reduced to a point where it's easier to do transactions. And so we expect 2024 to be a good year for the secondary market. And I think it's going to stay like that until interest rates start to go down again. And then, you know, liquidity comes back and companies can be exited, and then LPs have got less of a liquidity issue.
What about the kind of the longer term? I started by saying that, you know, private equity is mainly about the primaries. And I guess that's because they're all closed-ended vehicles. But how big over the long term do you think the secondaries market could get?
Well, you know, in terms of numbers, I don't know. But what I can tell you is that when we speak to LPs today, there is still a majority of LPs who would tell us, you know, we like to keep funds until maturity. We are not sellers in the market. The people who are most active are the more sophisticated investors. You know, all the fund of funds, for instance, they use the secondary market as a way to optimize their asset management. They use the secondary market as a tool to be better asset managers. But pension funds, family offices, insurance companies, unless they have a liquidity issue, they're not really using the secondary market as a tool to manage their portfolio. And I think that's going to change, because as the market grows and as more and more people participate in it, I think all these investors will realize that, you know, there's no stigma about selling. You know, it's just a way to manage your portfolio. And what's the point of keeping a portfolio of 100 relationship if you only have 20 relationship that are active?
Do you see the secondary market being more enabled by technology, and so it could become more of a kind of a straight through trading type system?
You know, there's been a number of attempts to sort of organize platforms for trading. They've all been unsuccessful. It's still a very private market. Information is confidential. You need to share information under confidentiality agreements. GPs don't like their information to be on platforms. And so those platforms haven't been that successful. I think where technology can play a role, it might be on the administration of all the transfers, you know, all the legal administration of the transfers, because when you sell a portfolio of 80 funds, there's a lot of admin behind it. You know, you need to sign agreements with GPs and buyers and sellers 80 times.
So that could be slicker.
That can be probably facilitated. But then also in the valuation of the portfolios, when you value a big portfolio with many lines, today, most people are still using spreadsheets and Excel, and they have people inputting all the data and then running the model. And there are new entrants in the market who have developed AI tools in order to automate the pricing process. This is relatively new. We have to see how it develops. But I think this is where the market is going. I think, you know, technology is helping, I would say, more on the pricing than on the actual execution of the transaction.
Great. Well, Etienne, thanks so much for sparing your thoughts on the secondary market. It's been educational for me, and good luck with your endeavors.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to the Fundshack Private Capital Podcast. Now, do me a favor, would you? Wherever you're listening or watching, please leave a like or a rating and make sure you subscribe. It really helps, and I'd appreciate it. Fundshack is another quality production of Linear B Group, the content and media provider for professional services and investment firms. Thanks for listening.